All right. Welcome in to the Sports Huddle on SEMO ESPN Radio, 1220 AM, 93.5 FM, and online at SEMOESPN.com. Eric Schahn and the Missouri Sports Hall of Famer Jess Bolin inviting you to join us in the huddle. Here is our EBOMD huddle hotline number, 573-334-1220. 573-334-1220. The huddle hotline powered by EBOMD. It's a Monday Marty party. Marty Mischow, the Love Shack, will join us a little bit later on in the show. Get his thoughts on the goings on. And we had a lot of basketball, baseball over the weekend. Jess Bolin in the house. How was your weekend?
Couldn't be better. A lot of basketball, a lot of baseball. Well, that could have been better. It's just a misstatement. If Cards would have held on that lead last night. Of course, you can roll back the tape. I think I said the Cards would win 2 and lose 5 on this West Coast trip. They're sending 1-3, going to play 3 more in San Diego, and I think it's got a good chance to be 2-5. Don't you? It's maybe
not a very good chance.
Maybe 1-6. Their bullpen, for one, John King wouldn't even be on my team if I was running that ball club. I'd rather have a young guy that was really good in AAA than have a guy that's hanging on. If he's so good, why didn't he come from Texas?
Yeah.
In that trade with Montgomery? I'm sorry. I mean, might be a great guy, but this is not a business of being a good person. It's a business of winning. And I don't have any. In fact, when I went to bed, I taped the game and I watched it up until the seventh. The Cards had a 4-run lead when I went to bed. So I guess it was the sixth, maybe. I said, there's no way they're winning this game. National TV, Dodgers playing at home. They will not win. Because, well, one, the Dodgers are a much better ball club than the Cardinals to begin with, but Cards' bullpen is very, very shaky and very, very unknown. They got some guys that could maybe be decent, but I don't think John King's one of them.
Well, John King did not accompany the Cardinals to Los Angeles. They had to put Riley O'Brien on the injured list. He has a flexor strain in his right forearm, so they called King up from Memphis for the ball game, and it did not go well for Mr. John King. Cardinals have the lead, eighth inning, Max Muncy at the plate. Max Muncy had the lowest batting average in the entire major leagues of every single player against left-handed pitching last year. And here is the meatball from John King.
Muncy to right. Exit stage right. Dodgers on top on Max Muncy's smash. A no-doubter from Muncy. He did it last night in the ninth. In a loss, he does it tonight, and now the Dodgers have the lead.
You talk about a guy that last year struggled against lefties.
And that's all she wrote.
Well, and let's also face another factor. The Cards got to get better hitting out of Arenado and Goldschmidt. I know Goldie had a couple RBIs. One's on a ground out. One's on a pop fly that dropped. If these guys don't come through in the clutch, bases loaded, one out situations, Cards are not going anywhere anyway. And can't depend on your young kids all the time. Scott in Centerville's been probably better than expected. Jordan Montgomery hasn't even lit the candle yet. So we'll see. You know, I'm not one that going to judge a season on 4 games, but Cards are kind of predictable right now. They're overpowered by fastballs. They take too many pitches, especially Goldschmidt. and he still looks late on the fastball to me. But what do I know?
And after a bad year last year, Nolan Arenado just 1-for-16 at the plate.
And no kind of power whatsoever. So they got that going for him.
The bullpen for the Cardinals. Here's one of my questions. So you did not use Giovanni Gallegos last night. Why did they use him on Friday? Why? In a game you're losing substantially, why run Gallegos out there? You could have used him last night.
Well, that's one of the things we talk about managing. You know, you got to realize you got a game tomorrow, you got a game the next day, you got game one after another. So that's part of managing. You can't have guys unavailable just because you're trying to get through one game, hold a score down maybe. I don't know what the reasoning to put one of your best relievers in a game that means you're out of, you know, you are hopelessly beat. But you'll have to ask them that question. I've asked that question quite a bit. Why?
Andre Pallante came into the game, pitched an inning in the third, gave up a home run to Teoscar Hernandez, who absolutely battered the Cardinals. So, Pallante, a league minimum guy, John King, a call-up from Memphis, a league minimum guy. Why don't you stock your bullpen with, I don't know, guys who have a little bit better track record that you might actually have to pay them a little bit of money?
Yeah, and those guys were available. Cars just weren't interested in expanding. The Cardinals, I think, got a feeling that you can just throw anybody out in the bullpen. And they'll come through for you. That's not the case. How many games do you have to lose in the eighth and ninth inning before you realize, I might need somebody else to come in this situation?
So it is a 4-0 lead in the sixth inning and just unable to get it done. And you've got to like the way Steven Matz threw. If you're looking for positives in the baseball game, 5 1/3, he pitched you one out into the sixth inning. 2 earned, 3 Ks through 81 pitches. Took him out after 81 pitches. Now, I know they brought him along slowly in spring training, and there are Cardinal fans that were griping on social media that he was only out there for 81 pitches. First outing of the season, I didn't really have a problem with only 81 pitches, did you?
No, not this time of year. Maybe in June or July, you know, you want to stretch him out a little better than that. But first start, no, I don't have a problem with that. That's not one of my gripes. My gripes is some of the people on the team shouldn't be in the big leagues. They're not big league players. Now, here's, if you've got guys, and I don't care, you know, these guys that bring up, they're all starters. 90% of these guys they bring up are starters, aren't they? They make relievers out of them. Cardinals' theory is you introduce them to Major League Baseball by being in relief, coming in, throwing an inning here and an inning there, which I do agree with that. But you've got Graceffo, you've got a lot of guys that's got big names down there in the minors that are starters. Why not bring them up and give them a chance? That's my theory. Baseball is a young man's game. And when you get 35 past, in baseball age, you're getting up there where the efficiency gets defeated. Wait a minute. That didn't sound right. Efficiency, not deficiency. Help me out here. Quit looking at the computer.
I'm not really sure where you're going. I'm just waiting for the pay. I'm waiting for the payoff.
Hey, it's not where I'm going. It's where I landed. So anyway, the Cards just don't use their minor league system the way, if I were running the show, which I'm never going to do, I would do it a lot differently than they do on my young talent. Everybody else does, Eric. Everybody else, do you notice they bring up these 21-year-old guys, stick them out there, take a chance? I'd rather have a guy coming out of that bullpen right or left that can pop 98 to 100 miles an hour. Because in that situation, you're getting eighth and ninth. It's not only the pressure on the pitcher. There's pressure on that hitter in L.A. last night. They're getting beat in front of a big crowd on national TV by a team that finished last year. They do not want to lose that game. They're known as the best team in baseball, which they probably are. Maybe over Atlanta, maybe not. I'll still take Atlanta, but they're a lot better than the Cardinals. But this is the big leagues, okay? You could be the last place team and still have people coming out of the bullpen that's big league ready. If you score four runs in Dodgers Stadium on this team right here, they got, hold them to four runs, or got a four-run lead, you should win that game. And I know it's a long ways to go, but these wins and losses count just as much as they do in October or late September.
So if you don't use Gallegos in a game that you lost 6-3, you can use him last night. It's back-to-back games because using a guy 3 days in a row, which has happened for years and years and years and years in Major League Baseball, not the case anymore. And so before the game even started, Gallegos apparently was unavailable in the bullpen, and that's because you used him on Friday night in a game that you were not going to win. So far, the St. Louis Cardinals have a 6.09 earned run average, and again, it's a small sample size, four games, but ERA over six, and just as a team, they are hitting 173. Nolan Gorman has struck out 9 times in 17 at-bats. 9. Don't you just get the feeling when he gets the 2 strikes it's over?
I do.
I hope that changes. I'm sure it will. But right now, you've got Arenado 1-16. Donovan, who does have 4 RBIs, he's 2-16. Victor Scott has a couple of hits. Wilson Contreras, 1-10. Jordan Walker, 1-10. This is about the slowest start that you can imagine for the Cardinals to get off to.
It is.
Yet somehow they could have won 2 games in the series.
You talk about people being available or unavailable on your pitching staff. How many times on this show you heard me say, or on the broadcast of CMO Baseball, the toughest thing in managing to me is handling a pitching staff. You can, I know you got a pitching coach. Bottom line comes in, it's up to you as a manager what you do with your pitching staff. All the pitching coach can do is make suggestions. And to have a guy unavailable that's, would you say arguably their number 1, 2, 3 guy on the whole bullpen roster is Gallegos?
Yes.
He's got a great sinker, a great slider. Very good in late innings. Does give up a home run once in a while. He's not immune to that. But a guy that has no business in pitching in a game that you pretty well hopelessly beat, the way the Cardinals, they were losing 6-0, and you know, you don't pitch him in that game. To where you can't use him in a game that means something, you have a chance to win 2 days later. That's managing the pitching staff.
Why is Ryan Helsley not available last night? He pitched 1 inning.
No clue.
27 pitches, so he's down, he's out. You know, can't possibly. And he was not good.
You just you got to have people available. You know, it wasn't like I had six pitchers on my team. We played a heavy schedule in summertime. I had anywhere from 10 to 13 pitchers on my team in the summertime because we played six games a week. It's the same. That's the same. That's a big league schedule, Eric, for 2.5 months to play six games a week. And so you got to handle that pitching staff. You got to know who's got innings left, who's available, all that kind of stuff. That's your job. And that's one of the things I talk about managing. It's one of the toughest things because you're dealing with so many people at one position. Sure, the lineup, you can make out the lineup, and that's arguably a mistake if you put this guy batting fifth or whatever. You can always discuss that. That's minor. That's minor stuff. You're going to get times at bat, whether you bat first or ninth. It's the pitching staff. And some reason, they think this guy is big league excellent, I guess. Why would you extend his contract if you didn't? He got two more years added on to what he gave you last year.
So if Marmol,
I'd like to have a job with the Cardinals, to put it that way.
If Marmol was going to use Helsley in the ninth, and apparently that's what he said, well, the game wasn't on the line in the ninth inning.
Exactly.
The game was on the line in the eighth when exactly. Max Muncy came to the plate.
You know, that's the way I always look at it, too. If I've got a situation in the eighth inning, my number one relief pitcher that I have on the team, the right hitter's batting, in essence, what I'm saying is the wrong batter coming up against you. The game is going to probably be decided right there. Right there in the eighth inning.
Because even if they score a run or two runs, like they got two runs, there is no ninth inning to pitch.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know who started that, the guy can only pitch the ninth. But to me, you're going to pitch the situation. I probably wouldn't dip down to the seventh or sixth inning for that. But the last six out of a ball game, if my best pitcher, my best chance to get out of a situation, he's going to come in the eighth or ninth. I worry about the ninth when I got two or three on base in the eighth, and a guy like Ohtani or Freeman or Betts, or in this case now Hernandez or whatever his name is in left field they picked up, any one of those four guys coming up, they're going to have to face the best I got in that situation. Then in the ninth, I got a clean inning, nobody on, so I can start put a lot of people out there in that situation. But the Cards don't look at it that way. They didn't last year. They won't this year. So it's going to be painful to watch them in seventh, eighth, and ninth innings for me. I wish I could watch games and not manage the game, but I guess you ask any manager. You know, you ask any manager right here in town, high school or college or anything, that you have a tendency to do that. No, especially if you know a team well, like the Cardinals, would know who's there, who's available, what their history is, like you and I, and a lot of people. It's painful to watch them misuse the people they got.
And if you've got Max Muncy coming to the plate, you know he can't hit left-handed pitching. Major league left-handed pitching, not minor league John King pitching. Why use JoJo Romero in the eighth inning of a game that is lost on Friday?
There you go.
So then he's unavailable because you're not going to use him 3 days in a row. Do you want Romero or John King facing Muncy with the game on the line?
Cards got three guys. See if you agree with this. In my opinion, they have three guys that can pitch the ninth. Romero, Gallegos, or Helsley. Any one of them. So why have two of them unavailable? Well, I guess three if you count Helsley. Those three guys unavailable in that game last night.
Well, Marmol
for the ninth
said in his post game that he was saving Helsley for the ninth.
Saving, okay. What did it mean in the ninth? You were down a run and scrambling, and they didn't bat in the ninth. Dodgers didn't bat.
So I understand using Gallegos and Romero in the game that you won.
Yeah.
But you used them on Friday, and so then all of a sudden you are extremely hamstrung for last night and the injury to Riley O'Brien. So it was disappointing, extremely disappointing. The thing that was encouraging for me, Jess, the way that Lance Lynn went out there and shoved it against the Dodgers. Lance Lynn was excellent. Hopefully, that's what the Cardinals... Now, they're not going to get that every time from Lance Lynn, but he shows you he's still got some juice left. Agree?
I agree. He basically loaded nobody out and he struck out the side. You're not going to do that very often.
Now, both pitchers struck out the side in the first inning, Yamamoto, but he didn't allow a base runner. And Lynn bared down and got the three strikeouts to get out of the inning. And he was fired up. He pitched terrifically. Four innings, four hits, one walk, five Ks. So if I'm looking for positives over the weekend, it was certainly Lance Lynn to me. And the way they won that game in the 10th inning. After giving up the lead, and you think, okay, you're not going to win this game. You had a chance, and they battered Helsley for four hits. But you somehow come back and win the ball game. So you had momentum, and you had a 4-0 lead in the sixth inning last night. And you thought, okay, maybe they can find a way to split this series. Didn't happen. So now, Matthew Liberatore was not good in his two-inning outing, Jess. Sorry, he went three innings, three hits, two runs, two walks, three strikeouts. So obviously, not that you would have brought Liberatore in that particular spot with Muncy, but having thrown three innings, he was not available. So now you get ready.
Not available. Everybody you missed is not available. Game three of the season? Wow, that's really handling your pitching staff. In game three, you got three guys or four on your pitching staff that's not available.
Game four.
Yep.
It's unfortunate. Now you head to San Diego, and we'll see what the Cardinals can do against Padres.
Did you think, like I, that the two-year extension for Momo was kind of a tongue-in-cheek? I couldn't keep from smiling, thinking, what are they thinking? Bottom line is, you can say, well, you're coming down hard on Momo. He didn't give up the homer, but he's the guy that brought him in. He's the one that says, this is the man right now wanting this situation. I'm sorry, the buck stops with you. It always stopped with me. The decision I would make would always be mine, no question. So if you can't handle a pitching staff the way it should be, you can't manage in the big leagues. You can't manage anywhere, as far as I'm concerned. If you cannot handle a pitching staff, and I'm talking about a team that uses, I'm not talking about an American Legion team out here, a high school team that's got two good pitchers and nobody else. You know, everybody's just a thrower. They're so young. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about guys in college baseball on up that you can't handle a pitching staff and know what you got and how to use them. And I always have people available, and it's only the fourth game of the season. I'm sorry, you're just not big league caliber manager.
Cardinals, 8:40 tonight, and they'll have Kyle Gibson on the mound. Jess, I was extremely encouraged by the final spring start for Gibson with his 9 strikeouts. His slider was phenomenal. Now, will he have that same pitch tonight? We'll see, but I was encouraged by his final start. Not his first couple, for sure. But Maybe he's got that good breaking ball working tonight. 8:40. Matt Waldron will be the opposing pitcher tonight for San Diego.
See, I think the Cards could win tonight because they have more guys in the bullpen we just talked about that didn't pitch last night that'd be available tonight. But if that's the way you roll it, you got your bullpen available, the people you want in the game, only one time in a series, well, you're going to maybe win one game. So that's kind of the way I looked at it for the Cards. Went on a 7-game trip. I think they'll beat San Diego one time, and they'll come back to St. Louis 2-5. And you can definitely roll back the tape on that one. Since we're doing the podcast, that's easy. That's easy.
So it'll be Gibson, Michaelis, and Zach Thompson.
It's not that I want to be right on stuff like that, as I say. I just don't want to be wrong.
Good stuff. All right. Not the, I would say one of the bigger stories in baseball would be the start the New York Yankees are off to. Just 4-0. They win all four games in Houston. And Juan Soto went nuts. My pick for most valuable player in the American League.
Oh, yeah. If he struck out 8 times in that series, would you be saying the same thing?
Yeah.
The guy you picked?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Seriously doubt that.
Soto went 9-for-17, a double, homer, 4 RBIs. Opening day, threw out the tying run at the plate. Saturday, hit the game-winning home run. And then last night, he had the game-winning hit. That's a pretty good start for a guy in his with his new ball club, would you say? And they're
4-0? Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, this is walk year, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, he's going to be a free agent. So what do you expect? He's not going to be out of the lineup with little ailments very much. He's going to be on the field performing. He's going to put in a good year, and then he'll get paid. And then whether he puts in a good year the following year, that's up for questions. So I think Soto will have a great year.
And if I told you that the Yankees were going to go to Houston and Aaron Judge would go 2-for-16 with 6 strikeouts, would you say the Yankees are going to sweep the Astros?
No, I wouldn't say the Yankees are going to sweep the Astros if Judge even got a few hits.
So, Soto carrying the New York Yankees. So that's one of the storylines. Obviously, we had big storylines in yesterday's NCAA men's basketball tournament. DJ Burns for North Carolina State absolutely has fascinated the basketball public right now. 29 points in the game. He was 13 of 19 yesterday for NC State as they beat Duke 76-64. And that means that North Carolina State now has advanced to the Final Four for the first time since 1983 when they won the national championship. And if you're doing the math at home, this is an NC State team that at one stretch, they had a 14-game stretch this year, North Carolina State, where they went 4-10. Even when they won 4 games in 4 days in the ACC tournament, they weren't even considered a bubble team. There was no chance that NC State was going to get into the NCAA tournament unless they won the ACC. And they did it with 5 wins in 5 days. They punched their ticket. Now they have 4 more victories, including the double-digit win over Duke. So, Jess, if you're scoring at home, that is 9 wins in 22 days for the North Carolina State Wolfpack.
Well, I watched that game, and they really are remarkable about doing one thing, I think, in this tournament, especially, and probably those other 5, is they're relentless from time the tip-off starts on defense and offense. And you can see them wearing the team down, Eric. It's just like Duke yesterday. Everything is contested. Would you agree? Every pass contested, every jump ball on a rebound is battled for, just like it's the last one of the game. It's usually a burnout, or you have to have a good bench to play the game like that. But, man, I tell you what, they're hard to beat right now. And you can just see Duke wilting in that last 10 minutes of the game. And also, North Carolina State is a team that it seemed like every shot they take from outside, they really, really bear down on them. And they're just right now, I wouldn't say they lose to anybody. Now, UConn is a much better team. We know that. But always the best team doesn't win. And right now, a team, how many times have we said going into a tournament, and I've said this about my ball club or anybody else's, it's not how good you are, it's how good you're playing at the time that tournament starts. I've had teams where we were on our scale. I was kind of particular with my team as far as being ready to play and stuff like that. But I've had teams that I thought, well, we're not going to go far in the national tournament. But all at once, the last five games of the season, they clicked. Now they're really playing well. And what I mean by that, you're not making any errors. I took a team to Wichita, I don't know, it's probably 10 years ago. Not overly great at anything, offense, defense, speed, or whatever, but they were great on defense and set a record in Wichita, Kansas. Probably still stands. One error in, let's see, 64 innings. Seven games. One game, 10 innings. One error. And so they were very successful. I've taken teams out there, I thought, well, we could possibly win this thing and get beaten two and go home. But right now, North Carolina State is, they don't see themselves as underdogs with anybody. That was number 11 seed, aren't they, in that bracket?
That's after they won the ACC tournament, they were 11 seed. They weren't even a bubble team. Yeah. Not even considered that they were going to make it.
In this tournament, even, they're 11th seed. And who did they take down yesterday? Where was their seed at? Duke, third, maybe in that 16-team bracket?
I think Duke was a five.
But right now,
they were a four.
They could take down anybody. It's as simple as that. And I'm pulling for them. I'm a fan of theirs. I want to see them win it all. Because I guess everybody likes the underdog. I'm sure they got plenty of fans.
And as far as Duke is concerned, Kyle Filipowski, their star, I think that guy's soft. I just think Filipowski is soft. He got run into, you know, in the court storming. I'm hurt. He played the next game.
Yeah,
He fouled out. He was 3 for 12 in their biggest game. Missed all three of his three-pointers. I know he's a good player. I just think he's soft.
I don't know. You know, you get your opinion of a team or a player. Maybe you're wrong about it. I've done that myself. You read somebody, you come to a premature opinion on them, and you wind up being wrong. But Duke, and I know they've had some great teams in the past, always strike me as a bunch of rich guys, that the lawyers that are pretty good athletes, and they're out there playing, and their basketball is not going to be their future. Some of them, maybe a few of them, but they're going to be millionaires when they get on. I just don't have a good, they don't put up a good image for me as far as sports.
So this sets up the Final Four, which gets underway Saturday. The first game will be NC State and Purdue. And the second game, Alabama-UConn. Now, Alabama will have to shoot the game of their life. They're going to have to hit a ton of threes. They're just going to have to shoot a tremendous percentage against UConn. Two excellent offensive teams. Already Connecticut's an 11.5-point favorite. Purdue against NC State, they're favored by 8.5. And yesterday, Zach Edey was absolutely phenomenal. Just the man played 39 minutes. 39. Zach Edey, 40 points, 16 rebounds. Of the teams remaining, Alabama, who UConn will play, NC State and Purdue. I think Purdue is the only team that has a chance to beat UConn. Well, now, they've got to get by NC State, yeah. But I don't think any team could beat UConn other than Purdue, and I'm not sure they can.
I am not either. I'm not sure anybody can beat UConn. But I think that was the majority of opinions before the tournament started.
I thought Illinois would give them a game. The game is tied at 23. 23-23. UConn goes on a 30-0 run. When have you ever heard of a 30-0 run this deep into an NCAA tournament? I bet there's never been a team in the Elite Eight who ever went on a 30-0 run.
No, I've never heard of it. Because you're
just blew Illinois' doors off.
When you're you're playing against an elite team that's on the floor playing against you. So they're not used to having 30-0 runs against them. Unheard of. But UConn, I would say, when you that before this tournament even started, they were heavy, heavy favorites. You get the field, I'll take UConn. That type of voting. So they've been heavy favorites, but they are performing like they never won anything in their life. So I'll say this, UConn is, and why not? If you can win by double digits against the team, keep that momentum, keep that success rate you're playing with, and UConn's doing that. So I don't see anybody beating UConn, any one of the teams left, even NC State.
I think Purdue's the only team that has a shot. How they deal with Zach Edey, I don't know. But they'll have a game plan for him. But 40 points, 16 rebounds, and he played 39 minutes. This is a big man at 7'4", basically didn't come out of the game. Came out once.
Yeah, that's a big man playing big.
And a huge women's basketball game tonight, Jess. Caitlin Clark and Iowa against Angel Reese and LSU.
And you folks, if you haven't seen Caitlin Clark play, the number one scorer of all time, isn't she?
Yes, she is.
Men or women. She's unbelievable. You got to watch the game. If you're listening to this show right now, you got to watch the game just to see her. See what she can do on the basketball floor. It's remarkable.
I don't know if they're going to win because they got crushed by LSU last year in the championship game. But I am rooting so hard for Iowa. I think Kim Mulkey is the most unlikable coach in any sport that I can remember. You just can't root for – outside of the state of Louisiana, how can you root for Kim Mulkey? She is just so unlikable.
Yeah.
I am sorry, man. It's just the way I feel.
But Caitlin Clark's worth your time if you're not even a basketball fan. Because once in a while, generationally, a person comes along like a Michael Jordan or Mark McGuire in that great year, Barry Bonds or Mike Tyson or Muhammad Ali. Once in a while, somebody comes along like that that is just a cut above everybody else. Well, Caitlin Clark's that girl. She is fun to watch. And I'll tell you, when she takes shots, Eric, she takes NBA shots. I mean, she'll be out there as far as you can get. I mean, you can say it's unreasonable to think anybody can shoot from that distance and be good, but she is. She's the class of collegiate women's basketball.
She shoots from the logo a lot. And then in the second game, you've got Paige Beckers in Connecticut against Juju Watkins, the great freshman for USC.
What time does the Iowa game start?
6 o'clock on ESPN, LSU, Iowa. It'll be followed by UConn, USC. So,
and what do you like women's basketball?
Paige Beckers and Juju Watkins.
If you don't like women's basketball, that's not the point that we're trying to make. You have a chance to see somebody that's already set history.
And with the storylines with Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark from last year, ESPN's going to get a big number tonight. All right, you want to see what Marty has to say about it?
Always.
All right. We'll check in with the Love Shack, the Monday Marty Party. On the other side, it's the Sports Huddle on SEMO ESPN. It's the Sports Huddle on SEMO ESPN, 1220 AM, 93.5 FM. And you can always find us online at SEMOESPN.com. Eric Sean and the Missouri Sports Hall of Famer Jess Bolin on Mondays. It's the Monday Marty Party. We welcome in Marty Mischow to the program. How was your weekend, Marty?
Man, great weekend. Unbelievable weather and so much good sports. You and Jess pretty well covered the NCAA tournament. I don't know if I can even add any of that. You guys did a heck of a job going through about everything.
Well, do you agree or disagree that Purdue is the one team that I think would have the best chance to beat UConn?
Yeah, I think all the national commentators, they're pretty well, and once Purdue got past those first couple rounds of kryptonite, last few years, and they were looking strong, and once Connecticut started steamrolling everybody again, pretty well everybody's been saying that Purdue's got the only chance of knocking off UConn. So that would be a kind of probably the best, possible competitive championship game. But like you guys were talking about, it's hard not to root for NC State, man. What a story. Not only were they not even a bubble team, most reports said their coach had a good chance to get fired, yet they win the ACC tournament, and an automatic clause in his contract kicks in for a two-year extension. So he went from possibly getting fired, because they hadn't made the NCAA tournament, I think, like four of the last 5 years, to now going to the Final Four. That's an unbelievable story.
And another thing he'll do is he'll have some leverage to go in and say that two-year extension needs to be more money.
Yeah, you're right, Jess. We're saying that two-year extension needs to be like a 5 or 6-year extension.
Yeah.
Alabama is capable with how efficient they are on offense, and they like to get up and down the floor and shoot threes. I mean, they would just have to have an offensive game for the ages if they're going to upset UConn on Saturday, in my opinion.
Yeah, UConn is just a machine. I'm watching that game, and you guys talked about it. Illinois is hanging in, and next thing you know, it's a total blowout. I mean, UConn is a machine, and you're right, Jeff. They were the Vegas odds, the heavy favorite going into the tournament to win it all. But going into the season, I read they were only picked third in their own conference. They lost 3 NBA players from last year's championship team, so they weren't expected to be like another dominant kind of team. I mean, obviously they were expected to be good again, but, man, they're crushing everybody. So I heard guys on ESPN saying the question is not can anybody beat UConn. The question is can anybody play them within 10 points?
And Donovan Clingan, in that game, Marty, against Illinois, was just, first of all, he's unstoppable on offense. And I mean, every time guys like Terrence Shannon Jr. or anybody took the ball into the paint, Clingan either blocked their shot or altered it or forced them to do something other than try to go right at him.
Yeah, in a day, and you still see some in college, but not in the NBA, not at all. But in the day where the traditional low post kind of big man is kind of semi-extinct, even in college, you got two guys 7'2" and above in the Final Four with Clingan and Edie that are like those traditional guys that you just don't see anymore that often. And another reason, if they played in the final, those two guys going head-to-head would be a great matchup. But and Edie, I think Kleening was a really big recruit. Edie wasn't even a – I read an article. Now, he played on one of these loaded high school teams, one of those prep schools. He didn't even start on his high school team, you know, that IMG Academy in Florida, who churns out a bunch of NBA guys. He wasn't like some can't-miss kind of guy. He just evidently worked his tail off, and I can see a role for a guy like that in the NBA, even though it'd be interesting, you know, because like I said, in the NBA now, those kind of just traditional back-to-the-basket big centers, remember in the old days, yes, those were the stars of the team.
That'd be your number one draft choice about every year.
40 years ago, he'd be hands down the number one choice.
Yeah. Everybody always said back then, we build from the big man on up.
And he's done so good. And I've read some of these mock drafts. He still should be like a mid, you know, maybe in the 15, in the teens draft pick, which is still pretty good. But, yeah, in the old days, he'd be unbelievable prospect.
How about the story of DJ Burns for North Carolina State? Marty, the transfer from Winthrop, originally with Tennessee, you know, the starting five for NC State are all transfers. I mean, that's the way college basketball goes. But DJ Burns, I don't know how many people had even heard of him before he went crazy in the ACC tournament and is continuing to do it in the NCAA tournament. That's a pretty cool story for the Wolfpack.
Yeah, first of all, the guy that's got such a good personality, and also, you know, he's one of these guys that really doesn't look like he'd be a great player. You know, if you just saw him walking down the street, you would think that guy'd be an unbelievable player because he's, you know, he's a stocky, almost chubby kind of young man. But, man, you talk about footwork and what a touch around the basket. I mean, those shots he was putting in over those big guys were just unreal. I mean, barely hitting the rim. The guy was talking on ESPN this morning, with his footwork and his size, there might be, if he doesn't pan out in, you know, any kind of big-time pro basketball, there's some NFL teams might look at him as like an offensive lineman or something with that kind of agility and footwork.
You know, I think he's got the body type of an Oliver Miller. You remember the old Razorback? He's got that same type body, right, Oliver Miller?
I remember him, yeah.
All right, so we've also got the big game tonight, and I got to imagine it was almost 10 million, 9-point-something million last year for the LSU-Iowa National Championship game. I've got to believe there's a chance at even a bigger number tonight for ESPN with the rematch, Kim Mulkey, Angel Reese, LSU, Caitlin Clark, Iowa.
Yeah, I enjoy women's basketball. I know you guys do, too, calling all the female games and everything. But there's not a lot of times where I get just unbelievably, you know, extra excited to watch a women's game. But tonight is one of those games, man. I can't wait to watch that game. There's so many storylines and Eric, I heard you talking a little while ago about Kim Mulkey. I was out yesterday just taking a walk and listening to ESPN Radio. These guys in the morning are pretty good, and they were talking about how she, by all accounts, that article in the Washington Post was a good article that didn't really, you know, do any kind of a hatchet job. And she, before the fact even came out, had no idea what was going to be in that article. She's threatening lawsuits, and but they almost, these commentators are comparing her to like what maybe she's a, like almost a, as a coach, a polarizing figure like Bobby Knight was back in the day. They were comparing her to that.
She just comes off so unlikable. I'm not questioning her greatness as a basketball coach. I mean, she's got multiple championship rings. Baylor, LSU, they may win another one. I don't think anybody's going to beat South Carolina this year, but I cannot root for her.
Yeah, it's hard. Like you say, there's probably not a whole lot of people unless they're in the state of Louisiana, but Yeah, I'm looking forward to that game. You're right, Jeff. Caitlin Clark is, I mean, there's been some tremendous women's players there. But the way she plays, I mean, not only her shooting, but the way she handles the ball. She had 15 assists in an NCAA tournament the other game. I mean, she's just so much fun to work, to watch. And, you know, she's kind of helped kind of grow the women's game just in the last couple of years. Because like Eric said, seems like every game they play, they get record ratings numbers.
Marty, didn't she lead the nation in assists this year?
I'm not as sure about that, but she might have. I mean, her overall stats are unbelievable.
I thought it was...
A lot of times when you just have a score, like what's she average, 31, 32, you don't average that many assists, but, man, she just does it all.
All right, the St. Louis Cardinals off to a 1-3 start, let one get away last night. Marty, your thoughts on the early season struggles for the baseball team in St. Louis?
Yeah, like you guys were talking about, they went 1-3 in L.A. It's probably not that big a surprise. The biggest surprise probably is that they almost split the series. But, man, I mean, you know, I don't think anybody thought their overall pitching staff would be exceptional. We talked last week, you know, their offense has got to make up. You know, if their pitching staff is just respectable and their offense is really good, they can have a decent season. But that offense doesn't come around. I know it's early, but I never try to. I know Jeff has coaching all these years. You never try to overreact over a few games against, you know, one of the, if not the best teams in baseball. But yeah, probably not a whole lot of positive signs out of that series.
By the way, yes, Caitlin Clark does lead the nation in scoring and assists.
In other words, she's the best scorer and she's the best person to feed her teammates.
I mean, it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
Marty, SEMO baseball, 2 of 3 over the weekend against SIU Edwardsville, and the only game that they lost, they had leads of 8-0 and 9-1. They just couldn't shut off a big 9-run inning for the Cougars in the 8th in game number 2. But SEMO bounced back and run ruled them the following day, and the offense continues to percolate right along for SEMO.
Yeah, last week we were talking about how, you know, in that 3-game series, scoring so many runs. How about in consecutive 3-game conference series to score that many total runs? That's probably got to be close to a record, man. I mean, their offense is just a juggernaut. And I know on the surface you look at their SEMO DRA, it doesn't look that great. But in the OVC, it's pretty darn good because, you know, there's not a whole lot of great pitching staff in the OVC. So should be a good series this weekend with Little Rock. I know they have some really strong pitching and I don't know a whole lot about their offense. I don't think they're off to a great offensive start, but that should be a key series early in the season for sure.
Yeah, and it's on the road in Little Rock. I know Jackson Wells had such a great year last year. The pitcher, he's back. He's not doing what he did last year. But they've got a guy named Haas. That's right, Haas Brewer, who is second in the league in ERA and shut out Morehead State, I think, for 6 or 7 innings when they played in Little Rock. So the Red Hawks are going to face a little better pitching than they saw probably the last 2 weekends. We'll see how their offense adjusts.
Yeah, I've been reading. I was like looking at the box scores. That Haas Brewer, he's been really consistent. And, hey, Jeff, if you're named Haas, you better be pretty good, don't you, man?
Yeah. Yeah, you need to be. And if your name is Haas, you're bound to be a big guy. But that doesn't always transfer into being talented.
And the tennis team, Marty, continues to roll right along. I don't think anybody expected them to get much of a challenge from Tennessee State, but they're back home this weekend. And I think it's Southern Indiana, and I think they're undefeated. So you got the 2 undefeated OVC tennis teams. And it will be in Cape on Friday.
Yeah, but I don't look for much of magic. I talked with her last week or 2 weeks ago. There's only 2 right now top-flight women's tennis teams. That's SEMO and SIUE. So I'm sure Southern Indiana, if they are undefeated, they haven't played SIUE yet. So SEMO, that's their last home match. They're pretty well assured to win the regular season and then just go in the tournament. But, yeah, Simo, I know a lot of people don't follow it, but I give that coach, Mary Beth Gunn, tons of credit. Until she got here, Simo women's tennis had never even sniffed any kind of OVC championship. Now they're all assured if they win it this year, which would take a miracle not to, that'd be three regular season titles in the last 4 years, and they're going for their third straight tournament title. So, man, you're talking about taking a program that had done absolutely nothing and turn it into an OVC power. That's impressive. And I had a good time at the track meet over the weekend. I saw almost all of it Saturday. That's always fun at the Joey Haynes Invitational. I know the track team doesn't have too many opportunities to be at home. In fact, that's their only home outdoor meet. I always try to hit that one. But it's always fun because you see a lot of ex-SEMO track athletes that come into this meet, and I see some people I hadn't seen in years and years, so that's always a good time.
What else, Marty?
Man, I think we covered it, guys. Good talk.
All right, and it will be Missouri State tomorrow. Missouri State, Marty, they've played one of the toughest schedules in the country, but I think they're 1-10 in their last 11. So it's a struggle right now for Missouri State, but SEMO has not played well in that ballpark, Hammonds Field. That would be a nice non-conference win to give you a little momentum headed to Little Rock if they could pull that off.
And get you above 500.
Yeah.
No doubt, yeah. Missouri State, I know their coach is Keith Gutton's been there. I know him quite well. I know he went to my same high school I went to in St. Louis, and I've known him over the years. And I know this is last year. What a career he's had. I know that. I think they just got swept by Illinois State over the weekend in a conference series, so I'm sure they'll be hungry too. But, I mean, non-conference games don't mean a super, super lot in the big scope of things, but you still – as Jess knows, anytime you go out there, you want to win. So I know SEMO definitely wants to win that game. That's against an in-state rival.
Marty, it's year number 42 at Missouri State for Keith Gutton. Announced his retirement before the season started. 42 years. Took him to the College World Series in 2003. And among active coaches in all of college baseball, he's the second winningest active coach.
Yeah, what a career that guy's had. I mean, and like you say, to take a kind of so-called mid-major to the College World Series, that's not that easy to do. So kudos to him.
All right, that's a 2 o'clock game tomorrow. Marty, we will talk to you next week.
Sounds good. See you guys.
All right, that is the Love Shack. Jess, hello to the radiant and ravishing Dawn Sean. She just finished up 3 12-hour shifts Friday, Saturday, Sunday, so she's got the day off for the next few days, and is fired up. She's going to go watch the Red Hawks play at Missouri State tomorrow.
She's making quite a few of those games, and she's, yeah, for a woman that carries the R's that she does in the medical field. I want to say hi to my girls, too, down in Texas and Columbia. My little sister, Neva, here in town. I'm going to give you this one today. The best things in life are the people we love, the places you've seen, and the memories you made along the way. I don't know who wrote that. It was given to me. I know who gave it to me, but I don't know who wrote it. So, anyway, that's all I got. Hey, you know what? This is one of the days this week that you could be kind to somebody and maybe, just maybe, make them a better day than what they got going. It doesn't hurt to be kind. Try it, Eric. Give somebody a smile.
We'll give it a shot.
All right.
All right. We're off the next 2 days, Jess. We will be back here Thursday morning, and we'll talk then.
All right.
All right. Stay tuned. We've got Greeny coming up next on ESPN Radio. Hope you enjoy the rest of your Monday, everybody.